Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, July 26, 2016. I am Jason Powell here with a review of the WWE Raw show. It was the first show of the so-called new era, the first show after the brand split, the first show after WWE Battleground, the first show that featured Finn Balor and Nia Jax on WWE Raw, and it was a very good addition. I thought the brand split got off to a really strong start. I gotta say, I hate to kind of make this a bit of a downer. Don't get used to this, because I don't think WWE can go at this pace every week. I mean, they gave us a new women's champion with Sasha Banks defeating Charlotte to capture the women's title. They gave us Finn Balor not only debuting, but winning a four-way match to qualify for to face the winner of another four-way, which turned out to be Roman Reigns, with the winner earning the right to face Seth Rollins for the new WWE Universal Championship at SummerSlam. And Finn Balor not only earned the right to be there, he won the damn thing, and so he will face Rollins at SummerSlam. So you had a lot going on, and you know, you had a lot of you had fresh faces and things like that, and they're going to continue to feel fresh for a little bit. But as far as giving you as much as they did, they can't do this. And so I can only say that I really enjoyed it as far as like the first installment of it would have been really discouraging had WWE just come out and given you the usual three-hour Raw show with very little change. It just half the crew, and they didn't do that. And so it was a refreshing change. They made some production moves that I thought freshened things up as well. And so overall, I just came away very satisfied with this as far as being the first installment, with WWE really trying to send the message that there has been a change. This isn't just lip service this time. They're really trying to send the message that there's been a major overhaul of WWE Raw, and I assume that is going to continue, maybe even more so tomorrow night on SmackDown. But certainly encouraging to see some very noticeable changes on the WWE Raw show in a lot of ways. Let's work our way through this. By the way, normally this is available exclusively for .NET members. I am doing this on the All Access side, as I do from time to time. But in this case, it's because later on today, Tuesday, I will be appearing on the PW Torch Livecast at pwtorchlivecast.com at noon Central, 1 Eastern time. I will be joining host Wade Keller to take your phone calls. I am on the show now once every few weeks is, I think, the average that's the plan. Once every 3 weeks, I'm on the show. And so we would love to hear from you. It's a live show. We take your phone calls. Again, it's pwtorchlivecast.com. With that taking place at noon, it's just a lot easier to kind of double up on the making the Raw review, the All Access. So I guess you can look forward to that every few weeks here on the All Access side of things. But of course, we'd love to have you as a .NET member. I will hold off, though, and tell you about membership a little bit later in the show. But if you enjoy this audio and all of the audio content we have on the All Access side, know that there is a ton more of it available for members. With that out of the way, the show was actually in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at Console Energy Center, and we got a video package that opened the show, looking back at the title situation at WWE Battleground. Then we got a new Raw opening and theme song, and featuring, you know, the video featured all the Raw brand talent, of course. And I can't say, like, the theme song grabbed me in a noticeable way. I think, like, the bumper music they use coming in or going into breaks or coming out of breaks, whatever it was, if it's the same song, it worked for that. But it didn't, like, the opening theme, as an opening, it just didn't grab me. The broadcast team was Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Byron Saxton, and they were not at ringside. They actually have a new broadcast position near the entrance ramp, and it's kind of like a desk there. They stand there and they talk. They stand up and talk to you. They're not just sitting at a desk anymore. They stand up and talk, and I like that. It just was a change, you know, and I got to admit, my first thought, though, was, how's anyone going to be put through the broadcast table? WWE loves that. And there's no broadcast tables at ringside on Raw anymore. It wasn't like they had the Spanish team down there, nothing. It was just these guys that they showed. Maybe we're going to have to wait for, well, we'll see what they do on SmackDown, but we might have to wait for pay-per-views. And who knows, they might change that format too. But Mick Foley, Stephanie McMahon stand in the ring and welcome viewers to the show. And it's not exactly the ideal message to send when Mick Foley has been joining Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon and sending the message that he wants to make this all about the talent. But you got to cut him some slack. It's the first show. And so as bad as it may seem to open things up with Foley and Stephanie right away, it had to happen. I mean, you guess, well, they could have opened with a match. They could have, but there was a lot of things they needed to address. And so I'm forgiving of this one. I don't want to see this become the norm on Raw, but I think this was all we really saw, and they weren't all over the show. It was very nice, but Foley talked about it being a new era. Working as cheap pop. He could do away with the cheap pop, and I'd be okay with it. Foley introduced the entire roster of Monday Night Raw, and most of the wrestlers walked onto the stage. The big one that was obvious was Brock Lesnar wasn't present. Foley said that he would be working hand-in-hand with the talent with the goal of delivering the most thrilling Raw every week. Stephanie said Foley's going to have the authority to make that happen, but basically, she wanted to rag on Roman Reigns. She accused him of letting everyone on the Raw side down by losing at Battleground so that they don't have a championship. And she claimed that Seth Rollins had it in the bag before Roman screwed it up for all of them. You're not a good guy. You're not a bad guy. You're just a loser, Stephanie told Roman. And Roman, the bearded one, just stood there stone-faced and no expression whatsoever. And then Stephanie said, the Raw audience demands a world champion, and that's what they will get, by God. She said that Raw will feature two fatal four-way matches, and the winners of those two four-way matches would meet in the main event of Raw. And she said the winner of the main event would go on to face number one draft pick Seth Rollins for the new championship title. And Foley said that the title belt would be named after the fans who make up the WWE Universe. And they announced that the new Raw version of the WWE Championship is going to be called the WWE Universal Championship. So SmackDown gets the WWE World Championship, or just the WWE Championship. Raw gets the Universal. It's bigger than the world. It's the whole universe. But Foley ended up announcing with all the wrestlers standing on the stage, he asked eight guys to step forward. The eight men were Sami Zayn, Sheamus, Chris Jericho, Cesaro, Roman Reigns, Rusev, Kevin Owens, and Finn Balor, who then walked out from behind the other wrestlers. I don't know if they kind of kept him in the very back and we didn't see him, or if he just kind of snuck out there and acted like he'd been out there the whole time. I'm not quite sure. But all eight wrestlers then stood at the front of the stage, and there was a light Finn chant at this point. And then Stephanie said that the WWE Women's Champion remained on Raw. She did stress it as equally important, and called for Charlotte to step forward. Foley pointed out that Charlotte tapped out to Sasha in a tag match at Battleground, and then booked Charlotte against Sasha for the Women's Championship on Raw. I thought they were going to announce a SummerSlam match, but no, it was for Raw. And then Stephanie told the competitors in the four-way matches to be ready because the first one would take place immediately, which is cue for we're going to a commercial break. Okay, I'm not big on WWE Universal Champion. Sounds, I don't know, just maybe it'll stick. You know, it's one of those that it didn't grab me, kind of made me laugh when I first heard it, but might be one of those that, you know, give it a few months and it's just going to become second nature and we won't even think about it. But I got to say, by the end of the night, Finn Balor was positioned in a way where hopefully the majority of the audience is viewing him as a star. It was a very, I really enjoyed what they did with him. We'll certainly be talking about him as the night goes on. Wasn't the most exciting way to introduce Finn Balor, just out there with all the other wrestlers and then stepping forward. But I think they just would probably tell you, well, yeah, but look what we did with him on this show. And, you know, so if it wasn't the hot entrance with the, you know, as far as getting his entrance for the first time, his music hitting out of nowhere, something like that. No, it wasn't, but this was this was the Finn Balor show in a lot of ways. After the first break, we got the opening match, that four-way, and in this one, it was Finn Balor defeating Rusev, Cesaro, and Kevin Owens in 2030 to earn a spot in the semifinals. He did have a couple of commercial breaks during this, and it was very good. I thought this was the better of the two four-way matches, at least the one I enjoyed more, and the one that felt more suspenseful as far as the outcome was concerned. I mean, I assumed they were going to give it to Balor, but you don't put anything past them these days. You can't, you know, you're just like, well, common sense says it's Balor's first night, but this is WWE, and who knows? They might look at it as, yeah, but we made him look really good, and we had somebody else win. But no, he ended up performing a coup de grace on Rusev and pinning him clean, with the fans counting along with the three count. So at this point, it was like, it didn't seem to matter. And he did saw a lot in this match, too. There were several near falls that he was the guy on the bottom and could have been pinned had it not been for somebody else breaking it up. So it wasn't like all-out Finn Balor domination by any means. But still, he wins the match. He goes to the semifinals of this title tournament, if you will. And it was certainly an interesting way to debut Finn Balor. But again, it was more about the story they told in the overall show than it was just that one big moment to open the show, or just the first time you see him appearing on the show. The broadcast team talked about New Day's title celebration and Nia Jax debuting, and they went to a commercial break. They actually had a brief but slick Nia highlight video that played. It's one of those little production touches. By the way, the stage, I think it had like some kind of arches to it now. It's just, you know, kind of decorative arches, but you know, it was enough of a shakeup with the broadcast team where they were. The ropes were red. You know, there were little things that did stand out. You could, even if you couldn't pick them all out, and I don't always have a great eye for that. I'm probably missing several things they did. I don't have a great eye for that, but it was enough that you're like, something's changed since last week, in a good way. Nothing stuck out like a sore thumb, like, oh my God, this is brutal, this has to go. I know there was a lot of us that just kind of groaned when we saw the Raw logo. I'm already kind of warming up to it a little bit. I don't think it's not the most creative one they've had, that's for sure, but it's not bothering me like it did when it came out, Friday night? But anyway, they come back and we got a Cruiserweight Classic video. And I'm like, oh, they're promoting Wednesday's show. No. In fact, they were the whole video ended with a graphic that touted that the Cruiserweight division is coming to Raw. And then Saxton said the division is exclusive to Raw, and it's the first time they've had one in 10 years. And Michael Cole mentioned that SmackDown was gloating over their rating-topping Raw last week. And Graves pointed out that they had the draft with all the stars of Raw on that show. So they're trying to kind of go, you know, create the sense of rivalry, and I guess they're going to bring up ratings without actually getting into what they are. But they, I don't, do most people care? I guess, hey, thank you, WWE, because I think it's going to drive more people to sites like this one, you know, where they're going to come and, all right, what's the rating? So I know what they're going to be talking about next week. There was a time during the Monday Night War when that was huge, but now, you know, I mean, we put out the viewership number and the rating. They talk about ratings. It'll be interesting the first time like the rating is higher than the viewership number. And, you know, one side wins viewership, one side wins rating. And if they actually go through with this to see which number are they talking about? Are they talking about the ratings that not everyone gets? Or are they going to just kind of lump in viewership numbers and call it ratings? I mean, they get the ratings, clearly. But, I'm just a minor thing that I'm looking forward to. But the second match was Nia Jax beating Britt Baker in 120. This was all about Nia. And they did acknowledge her family tree. She just dominated the match. One thing I liked, so she hits her leg drop and she has Baker pinned. But then she pulls kind of an old-school heel move of just, rather than take the pin, she pulls her up by the head and then dishes out a little more punishment, and she hit another leg drop and got the win then. Kind of the old, King Kong Bundy was the first guy that popped into my head when I thought of guys that used to do that gimmick. Bundy even took it a step further by making the referee count to 5. So, just another little thing they could do with Nia. But I thought, hey, this was one of, I think, 2 squash matches on the show, and I think both were very effective. They serve a purpose. You know, they did. This one didn't last long. I felt like it could have even lasted a little bit longer if they wanted it to. But you don't want to see an entire show filled with squash matches like I grew up on. I get it. You know, if I was lucky, I got a TV main event. It might not even be anything good, but it wasn't like, you didn't automatically know the outcome. It wasn't just a foregone conclusion, or at least as much of one. But there were plenty of shows that was just nothing but squash matches. And, you know, growing up on the AWA, I was lucky enough that it was a promo-heavy territory. So I got to hear some really great mic work in between all of these squash matches. But I don't mind a good squash match. I know some people just argue that you can't have them today. Well, yes, you can, and this proves it. It when it makes sense, when you're showcasing someone new like Nia Jax, or later on in the show, they're repackaging Braun Strowman, and they're trying to get him over as a monster, you absolutely can. You know, why would you have one of the other women be in the Britt Baker role? You could, but why? You're skipping a step. Why would you have one of the social outcasts be destroyed by Braun Strowman when you could bring somebody else in? The other squash match was phenomenal for reasons that we'll get to. We saw Sasha Banks stretching out. Goldust and R-Truth show up. She thought they were taking her picture. So did I. No, they were playing Pokemon Go. And on their way they went. As if they weren't creepy enough, Tom Phillips shows up. He just looked like, whoa, keep him away from Sasha. What's going on? He just kind of popped up out of nowhere and asked if she's feeling the pressure. And she said that she will make the dream she's had come true, the dream she's had since she was 10 years old, and said WWE Universe better get ready because the Women's Championship is about to have some new swag to it, and it's about to get lit. There's a cockiness to Sasha that I loved when she was a heel. And, I mean, she's getting over, and the reception she received after she won the championship was great. This is going to appeal to some fans that, you know, they're fine if their babyface has a little bit of an edge to it. And I don't mind it either. I mean, for, you know, it's not like I'm having a hard time figuring out, is she a heel or babyface anymore? It's not that. They could easily flip her heel, though. It's just there's a little bit more cockiness to the character than I think we normally get from the baby faces, and that may have something to do with why fans have been slow to take to it, along with the fact that WWE hasn't done a consistently good job with her. Saxton, hyped, and by the way, if you're like, what do you mean? She was great on NXT. Everyone knows. Not everyone's watching NXT, so that's what I'm talking about. It's not just the hardcore fan. I'm talking about the casual fan that may not be watching the NXT shows. But Saxton gave us a little bit of hype for the other four-way match that would be coming up after the break. They went to a video that hyped Brock Lesnar's return, not for SummerSlam, for next week's Raw in Atlanta. This feels like a really big deal, and you had Michael Cole questioning whether Brock would have anything to say about some of the comments that Randy Orton made at Battleground. He left it at that, and of course they're trying to get you worked up into, ooh, what's Brock going to do about Orton talking, you know, saying no enhancements needed. The reason this feels like a big deal isn't, it's, now had he come back the night after, or two nights after winning at UFC, I think that would have felt bigger and for the right reasons. This is more, my God, this guy's been in trouble, and he's showing up on Raw. So it feels important, and it is, but not exactly for the best of reasons. You know, there's a big part of me that just kind of shaking my head at this, going, yeah, you might get away with it now, but anything happens, and people are going to remember this. The media is going to be pointing out this is the same company that UFC suspended him, or Nevada State Athletic Commission suspended him if they get to that point, and WWE didn't do anything. Or if they give him some post-SummerSlam, you've been naughty, you need to go away for 30 days that you would have had off anyway. We'll see how they handle it. We ended up with the third match of the night after the ring entrances. This was at the top of the second hour of the show, and it was Roman Reigns defeating Chris Jericho, Sheamus, and Sami Zayn in a four-way in 17:45 to advance to the semifinals. Good job, WWE, in terms of not putting Sami and Kevin Owens in the same four-way the night after they had their last match. There was no real exchanges between them, unless I missed anything on the stage. But, you know, it was just kind of, they moved on. And they talked a little bit about their match, I think, but it wasn't like it was a big focus of the show, even though they stole the show the night before. Reigns looked good here. The fans were a little bit slower to get into this one. I think some of it is, I don't think that people, well, Sheamus, number one. He's just in kind of no man's land right now. I don't know if they're going to be able to salvage this guy or not. He may have been one of those guys that I think may have been better off going to SmackDown, where he could have been a little bit more of a big fish in a smaller pond. But I don't even know if that would have worked. He's just in a really rough place. They need to rebuild him somehow, and I don't think they have any ideas. But Sammy, I just didn't think was like, well, maybe if they wanted, they teased us with the internet dream match of Zayn against Balor, the broadcast team did. We knew Jericho is, you know, a lot of us know that Jericho's facing Balor on some upcoming house shows, but it seemed like this was Reigns' match, but still, by the end, they really had people into it. I like that Jericho and Sheamus worked together early on. Of course, their heels, it fell apart, but they worked that for quite a while, and then the fans did get into it, some of the near falls late. Reigns ended up spearing Jericho and pinning him to win the match, so we found out then it would be Roman Reigns facing Finn Balor later in the show. Broadcast team hyping the New Day segment for after the break. And that New Day segment was them celebrating 337 record-breaking days as WWE Tag Team Champions. And they had balloons. They each carried one with the different number on it, 337. And they also had New Day colored balloons set up in the corners, kind of matching the ring gear and stuff like that. And then they talked about that. They talked about Bootios. So it was once just a dream, and now it's an actual cereal, and they plugged where you can get it. And then we got a video package on their antics, and then they told a bunch of package jokes about the video package, a bunch of dick jokes. And then Woods said they were going to select someone to be an honorary member of New Day. And then they all started going, who, as they ran around the ring. They found a guy in a New Day shirt, and he was a bigger man, so he struggled to kind of get over the guardrail, but they brought him into the ring. And one of them said, "What's your name, Sonny Boy?" And he responded, "Sonny Boy." And like, no, what's your real name? Sonny Boy. And they just kept going on with this. So he went from thinking that New Day may have just pulled some guy out of the crowd, as crazy as that seems in today's corporate wrestling, that maybe they just, found some guy that they're going to have a little segment with here and have a little fun of coming up with this fan. And I think there had to be some people at home going, "That fan could be me if they keep doing this. I'm going to buy some New Day stuff and sit ringside." No, it was obviously just kind of some skit they were doing. Well, they got Sonny Boy to dance with them. They finally figured out, like, wow, that really is the character's name. And then Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows crashed the party by attacking the three New Day members. Sonny Boy escaped. They hit Magic Killer on Big E. There was a fan who kept holding up a sign during this segment and throughout the night asking Big E to stop diving. And that is in reference to him spearing people, I believe, spearing people through the ropes into the floor, because it looks like the man is going to kill himself one of these days. And if that's what it was in reference to, amen to the fan, the guy who brought the fan. They ended up going to ringside. They tore the shirts off of Kofi and Woods, that who were down at this point, and they ran Woods into the ring steps, I think it was, and then they walked over to Sonny Boy. Well, I wrote Sunny Day. Wow. You can tell it's summer. Gallows ended up blowing snot into the New Day gear and then threw it at Sonny Boy. And then we, so that was the end of the segment. And they hyped Neville for coming up, making his return after the break. Okay, it was a good outing for Anderson and Gallows. They had a little bit of that, the badass thing that's been missing from them when they've been playing second fiddle to AJ so much lately, where they've kind of been the fall guys, and they just haven't been positioned as like as a badass duo. The club wasn't really badass. It was two guys kind of protecting AJ, and it was kind of a strength in numbers, but not in a super intimidating way. And with at least tonight, they did manage to have a little bit of that aura to them. However, they're working New Day, and there's no guarantee that New Day isn't just going to pop up on the very next show. And which I assume is Raw. I don't think they'll be crossing over to SmackDown tomorrow night already. But if they pop up again next week, then and they're all just fun and games, laughing, ha, it's gonna kind of and there's they're not selling this. Well, we're kind of right back to where we were with New Day before the Wyatt thing. It worked with the Wyatts to some extent because New Day didn't just do that. You had Woods at least acting like he was afraid of Bray Wyatt. And that's kind of been the thing that has bothered me about the New Day gimmick. It's been very successful, and I'm happy for those guys, but I think it's been damaging to some of the teams they've worked with because they don't sell anything. The Vaudevillains are a key example of this. I think they laid out New Day a couple of different times. New Day never sold it. They pop up the next night on TV, and it was just back to fun and games like it never happened. That can't happen with these guys. If they want to do anything for Anderson and Gallows, New Day needs to show their mean faces. They need to show that this bothers them. They need to show that they're angry. They want to get their hands on Anderson and Gallows. That can only help. We also found out on this show that the Stone Cold podcast returns on WWE Network 2 weeks from now. It'll be after Raw in 2 weeks with Dean Ambrose as the special guest. Then we ended up with the broadcast, and so I'm guessing that means we're not going to see Dean drop the title within the next 2 weeks. The broadcast team stood at their new location and spoke about being impressed by Balor and Roman Reigns, and then talked about the match they would have to determine who faces Seth Rollins. We had JoJo introduce Curtis Axel as Mr. Irrelevant. It's an NFL term. Cole did go on to explain that. If you're an NFL draft person like I am, you know all about Mr. Irrelevant. It's the last pick of the draft, and then there's a group in California somewhere. I can't remember which beach it is, but some city, something beach, I think it is, in California. I think California, that holds a big parade for Mr. Irrelevant every year. Axel took the mic and said he was picked last because they saved the best for last. Best part about this, Curtis Axel wasn't wearing anything Social Outcast related that I recall. I think it's over. Thank God. The fourth match, though, was Neville beating Axel in 3:45. This was just a showcase for Neville. I mean, they easily could have made this an enhancement guy, but why? You know, it made sense with the other two. You could have done that here, but I think it just made a little more sense that babyface Neville gets to, you know, beat somebody who kind of matters. I mean, Axel's about as low on the food chain as it gets. He was Mr. Irrelevant, for God's sake. But at least he was drafted, unlike Heath Slater, I guess they would tell you. But, yeah, nice touch here. They did tell us that it was Neville's first match back on Raw since fracturing his ankle 4 months ago in a match that occurred in the same venue. So how about that? So he is back, and he has a beard. Otherwise, not much has changed. Didn't get a feel for whether they... You know, it's like they didn't have him in one of the four ways. You can look at that as, well, they're protecting him, or, and they don't look at him that way. I wasn't seeing any real momentum when he left. Another guy I wish would have ended up on SmackDown, but we'll see. Then we got a little hype for the women's title match in a commercial break. When they came back, Darren Young said he almost won the Intercontinental Championship at Battleground, but nobody better put their hands on Bob Backlund. And Bob told him that he nearly won it, and he will get it. And then you had Goldust and R-Truth doing their Pokemon Go bit. They thought whatever they were supposed to get was under Bob's bow tie. He flipped out. So we had a Bob Backlund meltdown. And then we had more broadcast team talking. More of the broadcast team talking. And Byron Saxton just starts acting like a jackass. I don't even remember what he was talking about. He just... they can't resist with him. He dances. Just carries on like a goof. I don't know who they think this is really appealing to. I mean, do they think people at home think this is funny? That it's endearing somehow? I feel bad for Byron Saxton. He might not even care. He might think this is great. Maybe he loves this, but it's bad. And it's a credibility killer that this guy goes on TV and just acts like such a goofball all the time. Not all the time. There are times when he comes off like a serious broadcast team member, but then he'll take you out of the moment by doing something. I don't remember what the hell he did here, but it was just like, oh, stop. And even Corey Graves just shot the camera a look of disbelief, like, yeah, that really happened. We got a Finn Balor video package. They did show shots of him in the demon attire, so they're not hiding that. I think they showed probably every NXT incarnation of the demon. Then we went to some hype for that match. Then we had Tom Phillips looking less like a creeper backstage, interviewing Charlotte and Dana Brooke. And Charlotte just talked about, she took exception to Sasha talking about pressure in her promo. And she said that Sasha will bow down to the queen, and she can bank on that. Why is Dana there? Because she don't talk, and that's Dana's strength. I'm not quite sure what Dana adds to this act other than, well, once in a while someone can interfere and save Charlotte's title. Great. But it was nice to hear from Charlotte in this case because, you know, it was one of the things I was worried about when they hyped that the match was coming up after the break. I'm like, wait a minute, we barely heard from Sasha in a very unmemorable talking segment. We haven't heard from the champion. You guys got to start doing more of this. And so at least they did this. It could have been done much better than they did. But at least they gave us a little something with both women talking at some point during the show. We saw Sasha make her entrance. They went to commercial. When they came back, it was time for Charlotte's entrance. And they did show us some still shots of the tag match at Battleground that included Bayley, who did not appear on the show tonight. And then it was the women's match started at the top of the third hour. Before we get to that, I told you, I'd tell you how you could take advantage of .NET membership, how you could access all the perks of membership, the ad-free version of the website, all of our audio content, all of it we've ever recorded. If you're into the daily all-access shows that we give you guys, those are usually, what, anywhere from 10 to 25 minutes in length. Once in a while, we'll go a little bit longer for you guys. But to know that on the member side of things, if you're into long-form audio updates, we have a ton of it. I mentioned Jake Burdett and I did 99 minutes just talking Battleground alone. We break down all the major television shows. SmackDown included now that it is meaningful again. But NXT, Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, Will Pruitt just wrapped up the first two seasons of that. He did season one last year when it was airing, but he just finished up the second season. Now he vows he's done. We'll see if he sticks with that, but yeah, he's not happy. I think he's going to. Will's usually, once he puts his mind to something, that's usually it. But we'll get that covered for you guys somehow, some way. But yeah, I mean, all the major television shows covered for you guys in audio form, pay-per-view, and otherwise. TNA Impact Wrestling is something that I do. I think I figured out today, I forgot to do it last week, but I'm normally very good about covering Impact. I think it was just a schedule change, and I'm like enjoying Friday going, ah, this is great. I don't have anything to cover, not realizing that, yes, idiot, you should have done TNA Impact Wrestling Audio. But membership rates do start for $7.50 per month. However, you can whittle that price down to an average of $5.50 if you take the annual option. There's also a six-month option that'll knock some of the price off. All the details available on the main page of ProWrestling.net. Just look in the sign-up area once you're on the main page at ProWrestling.net. You can't miss it. And take one of those three options. We would love to have you hear what we do on the members' side and enjoy the ad-free access to the site. Access the members' forum. Have some fun betting on the WWE pay-per-views. It's legal. Trust me. It's safe. It's not real money. I'm not running an illegal gambling operation. I wish I was. I probably wouldn't be doing this anymore. I'd be rich. It'd be great. But I'm not. So we could use you. The fact that I'm not running an illegal gambling operation means that we could use your support. So again, visit the main page of ProWrestling.net. If you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. Back to the third hour of WWE Raw, and it opened up with a bang. We had Sasha Banks defeating Charlotte in 1655 to win the WWE Women's Championship. Man, didn't see this coming. I mean, it was a good, long match. A couple of moments in there that were a little sketchy, but it was still a good match. The crowd was receptive by the end, and they went crazy when Sasha won in a way that I didn't expect, because this felt very premature to me. And I don't know if this is... this is a crowd that remembers Sasha from NXT. If you put this same match in another venue, does it get the same reaction? If it's in, you know, somewhere in I always go to Minneapolis because I'm from Minnesota, and that way people can't accuse me of picking on their home area. But I mean, does this get the same reaction if it's not somewhere in a, you know, in a hotbed wrestling market? I don't know. Maybe more and more people are seeing NXT, and Sasha would be just as over in Des Moines, Iowa, as she is in this case, in Pittsburgh. But, I mean, the crowd went crazy for her. It just felt very premature. It worked. I mean, the crowd was going gaga, but I was surprised to see this finish. I really thought, I looked at it, you know, I was like, all right, maybe they give it to her if they want to send a message that it's a new era, and I think that's what this was about. But I really thought they're going to have Sasha go out there and push Charlotte to the limit. We may get a cheap... We're probably going to get some sort of a cheap finish. Charlotte may even be taken to the limit and then walk out with her title, and then we get the SummerSlam match. But no, they went ahead with the title change. I had somebody on Twitter ask me, did Charlotte fail a wellness test or something? Because it didn't. I mean, and that... Believe me, it crossed my mind. I don't think that's the case. But and the reason it did is because this just felt mistimed in the sense that they didn't build to this moment. I don't think like 3 weeks ago or, you know, I don't think 3 weeks ago they looked ahead and thought, all right, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and then we're going to have Sasha beat Charlotte on that first edition of the new era of Raw. I think this was something that they made a late decision to do because there just wasn't any good storytelling here that built up to this moment. And so Sasha misses out on that. But if every crowd is as hot for Sasha as this one was coming out of the match, she's going to be fine. And I'm curious to see where they go with Charlotte. I'm guessing that's the title match at the pay-per-view, is that we're going to see a rematch between Charlotte and Sasha Banks at SummerSlam. But I am surprised they gave us the payoff here. I really thought they were going to save that for Brooklyn, where Sasha is mega over with that crowd. But they gave us the payoff on this show. After the match, they had Saxton enter the ring and congratulate Charlotte. Sasha, while noting that she was the first champion of the new era. There's a loud yes chant, but it was quickly overtaken by "You deserve it," which is cool. And then Sasha kind of took it all in and said, "I did it." And she said that it's been a dream since she was 10. She said everyone, she told everyone she was the best, and now the title proves it. And she said that it's a new era of WWE, the era of the boss, change, and women's wrestling. And then we got a yes chant again. And Sasha promised that she will show everyone why she is the champion and that there's only one boss in WWE. You see what I mean about just the cockiness of the character? And again, you know, hey, it seemed to be working, but it just I can see why people were kind of slow to warm up to this, because in NXT she really was a heel, folks. And so I mean, even if that's what you're watching, it didn't mean people weren't cheering her in NXT, because they were. But it's just it's kind of strange that they haven't toned it down just a little bit. I don't want them to move away completely from the Boss character by any means, but I am, if they want her to be the babyface, kind of surprised they didn't. There's little things they could do to where she could keep the Boss image up, but soften it up just a little bit. And that hasn't happened. Maybe she'll end up being the heel in all this, especially once Bayley comes up. I'm not sure. We went from there to. Oh, and by the way, I like that they're having. It wasn't just for this. There was other post-match interviews that they did. I like that. That was Saxton going out there and interviewing different people. Cole and Graves spoke about the match and then hyped the main event. Went to a commercial, came back. Braun Strowman made his entrance. He has new music, and I think it starts with him yelling, "Braun!" All right. He had new hair. The sides of his head were shaved, and then he has the rest pulled back into a ponytail. Kind of reminded me of like my picture, my high school haircut or something. It's kind of like a hockey cut. It's like it would be a mullet if he had anything on the side, but it's not. And I think you know, I had the, they called it a mullets were called hockey haircuts when I was in high school. They weren't just mullets. So yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Yes, everyone my age that played hockey had a mullet. I'm ashamed to admit. He said, he ended up. Well, they had Byron in the ring again. I like this. He's in there with a jobber. There's no better way to just. There's some people I like getting like, it's an enhancement worker. And then there's jobbers. James Ellsworth is an effing jobber. This guy, I mean, I kind of touched on this. There's some guys you see in a wrestling ring. Growing up as a kid, I would see this a lot. You can't imagine them really doing anything else in life other than being a jobber. It's like that was what they were made for. They look ridiculous in the ring. They don't look like they belong there, but at the same time, they completely look like they belong there because they're jobbers. And James Ellsworth looked like he was like the long-lost son of one of the Mulkey brothers. Oh my God, I love James Ellsworth. I even put on Twitter, I want the town of Ellsworth, Wisconsin, to give this man the key to their fine city. Oh God, James Ellsworth, my new favorite wrestler of all time. Braun Strowman destroyed him in 1 minute and 10 seconds. But they did before the match. They had Saxton ask him about why would you even take this match, and he just talked about how it was a dream come true, and how and he could get somewhere if he could just get a win, and it would do big things for his career. And I'm thinking, what career? What career do you have in pro wrestling, James Ellsworth? God bless you, James. But yeah, this. Remember this moment, James. I think this is probably the peak, unless you catch on with others the way you caught on with me, because you just really have no business. You have your look. There's nothing about you that says you belong in a wrestling ring, unless you're working as a jobber, and then you completely belong in a wrestling ring. Oh God, I love this. 1 minute and 10 seconds of destruction, and I think it worked for Strowman. I was just so focused on James Ellsworth that it didn't matter. It was just some big guy beating him up. Strowman just looked like a War Machine's like leader or something. He's so big, and he kind of had a War Machine look to him from Ring of Honor, by the way. If you're like, who the hell are War Machine? If you don't watch Ring of Honor, then we went to a Roman Reigns video package in a commercial break. We got more of R-Truth and Goldust playing Pokemon backstage. He just couldn't give us 1 week without some sort of Vince McMahon. Ha ha, could they? Enzo and Cass make their entrance, and they do a little mic work. And this was not designed to be Enzo's big moment. He just started talking about how things got a little more raw, and then he sang the old dirty bastard. He just called him ODB, not the wrestler, but the Wu-Tang Clan members. He emulated him singing, "Oh baby, I like it raw." And then Cass ran through a list of things that he likes raw, and this wasn't very good. He was interrupted by the Shining Stars, and I'm like, this is one where you just get Enzo. If there's one where it's like, hey Enzo, you got some material where you didn't make it very far, you got like two, three really good lines that'll make people laugh, it's Enzo. You know he does. And then you go, good. We're gonna cut you off so you don't have to worry about getting through the rest of them. Because when you interrupt Enzo, that's heat. When you interrupt Big Cass, It's a little bit of heat, but Enzo's the guy that people want to hear talk, and this was big cast talking, and so it didn't mean much. But hey, it was a match with the Shining Stars. It wasn't that big of a deal. I think they talked about liking Puerto Rico. I assume they did. Honestly, didn't care. But the match itself was Big Cass and Enzo beating the Shining Stars in 150, and it's because Goldust and R-Truth came to the ring playing Pokemon Go. And Primo ended up turning into, after being distracted by this, he turned into a big boot from Cass, who then pinned him. So just kind of a nothing match. I guess this means we're going to be seeing the Shining Stars feud with the Golden Truth. What an epic freaking program that is going to be. One for the ages, everybody. We got a shot of Roman Reigns walking backstage, and he was stopped. Or actually, he just stopped, and then we saw Finn Balor enter the picture. And Roman wished him luck. Finn wished him luck. And Reigns responded by wishing him luck in return. And Balor kind of got cocky and he said, "I'm Irish. We invented luck." And Roman, I thought, had a good line here. He says, "Well, I'm Samoan. Enough said," and walked away. So I like what Roman had to say here. However, I was very concerned at this point. I'm like, oh no, Finn's getting cocky. This wasn't like competitive, athletically cocky, or athletically arrogant. This was just him being cocky. And I'm like, this better not end with the club coming out and helping Finn Balor. And I know that's something that some of you would love to see. There's nothing more that you would have loved to have seen on this show than that. That's the thing you were hoping to see tonight. Finn Balor reunited with Anderson and Gallows, just like New Japan. Oh my God, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. No interest, because they need baby faces. Roman Reigns is not the answer. We've already seen them basically waste Seth Rollins' return so that he could go back and kind of just redo what he'd been doing before he got hurt, when he could have come back with all sorts of momentum as a babyface. Oh, because Roman Reigns is going to get over. And then AJ Styles. Now, it wasn't because of Roman, but AJ Styles is a great story. And he's doing a great job as a heel. He is. It's fresher than what Seth Rollins is right now. But still, AJ also has a great story. They could have used him as a babyface. And had they turned around and done the same thing with Finn Balor, I just would have lost my mind. Just for this delusional fantasy that somehow, some way, everyone is going to start cheering Roman Reigns and Vince is going to be able to stand up and go, "I effing told you so." Thank God they didn't do that. But I was at this point just like on the verge of losing my mind. Like, you've had a good show thus far. Don't ruin this. Don't ruin this by turning this guy heel right now. And I'm not saying you never can. I'm just saying don't turn all these different people heel when you have the obvious heel staring you in the face and it's the guy that you won't budge on. Because, well, Vince McMahon is in love with Roman Reigns as a babyface for God knows what reason. But the match itself, well, I guess the question now is, is he? I don't know. Because Balor beat him in 13:55 to earn a spot in the WWE Universal Championship match at SummerSlam. So it is going to be Balor against Seth Rollins. The internet may break. But Balor beats Roman Reigns. He caught him with a sling blade, followed up with a great running drop kick, and then the coup de grace, and pinned him clean. And Cole did acknowledge it was Balor's birthday. He's 35 today. And we got a graphic that hyped that SummerSlam match. And then we got Balor celebrating. We had Saxton. Or no, was it? I wrote Tom Phillips. Maybe it was Phillips instead of Saxton this time. But he approached Reigns at ringside and asked if he had anything to say. And Reigns said he hopes that Balor beats Rollins for the title at SummerSlam because he wants him again. And then he said, "I respect that dude." And then he kind of limped away. So still no signs of Roman turning. None. But it's, I can live with it. I just kind of... I thought there was a chance because of the wellness violation prior to that. I had just reached that point where I'm like, all right, Vince is being stubborn. This isn't going to change. Just, I give up. I submit. I tap out, Vince. Just keep pushing him this way. It doesn't mean it's going to work, but I'm just going to give up even thinking about this guy ever turning heel, at least anytime in the near future, because you're being that damn stubborn. But it was like, well, with the wellness policy suspension, man, we can crack that door open again. Maybe this will be the thing. Maybe Vince just needed that out. That would have worked, damn it, but then he went and got himself suspended. What choice did I have but to turn him heel? Doesn't look like that's happening, but at least they're not wasting Finn Balor and his babyface upside on turning on a heel turn because they need someone to feud with Roman Reigns. And they're not doing it. Thank God. So Balor ends up going over. No interplay between Balor and the club at all tonight. Doesn't mean there won't be, but so far, nothing. But I like the promo from Reigns afterward. I just, you know, again, I'd rather have him be a heel. But I like that he showed some respect for Finn Balor and put him over. And they had Balor continue to celebrate. Cole talked about there being a new women's champion. Balor going to SummerSlam. Then he says, what a night on a brand new Monday Night Raw. Good night, everybody. And so really kind of selling that, you know, things have changed. And I felt like the only thing missing was that he could have issued one more round of hype for Brock Lesnar returning next week, because that is a big deal. That it's his first public appearance since he tested positive, since he failed the anti-doping test. Yeah, I mean, that really is a big deal. But still, I thought this was a strong edition of Raw. We got some questions answered, obviously, about who would debut, what they would do about the world title situation. I guess we find out tomorrow night that Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan are going to go with, like, intergalactic, planetary, SmackDown tag team champions of the Milky Way or something. And then I don't know what they'll end up calling their women's championship, because I just figure that's going to be if Raw can do it, we can do it. Let's have tag team titles. They're going to have to. And so that's not what I wanted. You know, I really did want floating champions, but I said it's not a deal breaker. So it looks set. That's the key. That was kind of the big thing for me tonight, was finding out, all right, getting some clue. What are they doing with all these, you know, with all these titles? Certainly the world title on Raw, and now we wait to find out on SmackDown officially. But I would assume they're not just going to have a bunch of tag teams and a bunch of women fighting over nothing with no prize. Yeah, they're not doing that. So I assume that we are getting some sort of SmackDown tag titles and women's titles. It's just a matter of finding out what douchey name they come up with for those. But it's still going to be a very interesting show. They have their work cut out for them. You know, they really do as far as topping this. But as I mentioned at the top, this was the first show out of the gate. They did some things they're not going to be able to do on a weekly basis. You just can't have as much going on as you did tonight. But I give them credit for getting this off. They're sending the right message, setting the right tone for the brand split going forward. Not every show is going to be this good, but you at least set the right tone. You sent the message that, hey, things have changed. Look at this new star. Look at that new star. We've got this guy coming up. Nia Jax is here. We've got a new logo. We got the broadcast team in different places. We have kind of a different look and feel to the show than we did before. You know, there's enough going on where it's like, all right, I'm into this. I don't expect it to be this way every week, but you know, some of the production elements obviously be there, but I don't expect the show quality to be this high every week or to be as newsworthy every week, but I'm down. Let's see where it goes from here. I thought this was a good, solid start in a lot of ways, and I look forward to seeing now what they do on SmackDown. But that is going to do it for me. Thank you so much for listening. Everybody, hey, please take a moment to subscribe to this daily podcast. If you could, rate and review us on iTunes. You're really helping us spread the word about the podcast and ProWrestling.net in general, and thanks to everyone who has already done that, or for that matter, taken a moment to retweet the link that I send out, directing people to this daily podcast. And one final reminder, join me on Tuesday afternoon, if it's not too late, pwtorchlivecast.com. Wade Keller and I taking your phone calls. If it is too late, I would imagine that the replay of the show is probably available over again at pwtorchlivecast.com. But again, we'd love to hear from you at noon Central, 1 Eastern time on Tuesday. Wade Keller and I, pwtorchlivecast.com. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.